I'm Dream Queen in the cab with my friend Little Queen Trash Mouth, fellow KMRD DJ. She's got a show called The Hatch Attack Hours, Fridays 10 to noon, right here on KMRD. How you doing, homie?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me back.
So, we're going to pick it back up in our reading selection. A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. The American dream is so vast that it's taken us several conversations to wrap up. We're only, about halfway through this book. So, folks, you still have some time. All right. So, we left off about last week. We were talking about Dr. King coming to the realization that he was an untouchable here in the United States, living up from the 30s through the 50s. This was after his visit to India and witnessing the caste system there. So where do you want to pick up today?
I guess I'm just going to go to the next thing that I have marked up in my copy of the book, which is at the bottom of page 95, mm-hmm. where he starts talking about you can take the life, but you cannot take the right, these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That those, you know, reminds me of the Fred Hampton quote, you can kill the revolutionary, but you cannot kill the revolution. Mm-hmm. That stood out to me again because, as we've been talking about since the Bell Hooks book, and I've been talking about on my show, what is condition versus what is human nature? Of we know that these rights are intrinsic and inalienable and very much human, which I think just that passage really speaks to. It's interesting reading a lot of these. It's like he almost kind of, that Dr. King was like leaving an instruction manual for what was going to happen after his passing, kind of. Mm. And I feel that way a lot in this kind of quote. You may take my life, but you can't take my right to life. You may take my liberty from me, but you cannot take my right to liberty. You may take from me the desire. You may take from me the propensity to pursue happiness, but you cannot take from me my right to pursue happiness. What is he quoting? Because that's in quotes.
He's saying that go down and tell them, you know.
Okay, so okay.
As you're.
Thank you.
As are we really taking things seriously that all right. men are created equal right. and every person who lives in a slum?
Yeah.
You know, and you know, if somebody's trying to take away your rights from you, you tell them this. This is what you tell them.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah.
And then we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which that is coming from
the
Declaration of Independence. That's why I was like, wait a minute. That's what I'm like, the Declaration of Independence doesn't say that stuff before it, but it should.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were saying that that this really jumped out to you. Why?
Maybe because all revolutionaries, might, like on some level, do know what's coming in their future if they stay on these paths, right? But I see so much here of like leaving passages of comfort, words of comfort, like as if he knew what was coming. That yes. you know,
he had so many death threats,
right?
All the time, right. like all the death threats.
Which is this one, like and probably every
bombings revolutionary. On his house and things yeah. like that. And it also takes me to a movie that I've recently talked about on my show. It's called 1804, The Hidden History of the Haitian Revolution. And that was it was documented that Toussaint Louverture said that in Napoleon's prison. That you can kill me, but this is already happening yeah. over there. It will not stop the revolution. And that's the part I think about what religion gets all tied up in politics is because politics is so bloody. And as we fight for our freedom and we watch people be murdered and imprisoned, even from the earliest times of dissent, you have to make your peace with spirit and your family. I was also reminded of Huey P. Newton, a quote of his. I've played a snippet from a speech about what he's allowed to want and not want mm-hmm. as a revolutionary. That he can't allow himself to want a home. He can't allow himself to want a family. He can't allow himself to want certain possessions, because once you become attached to those things, then you're committing revolutionary suicide, is what he's calling it, because you either have to tap out of your revolutionary work and somehow become a part of the system in order to pay for those things. It's a capitalist system, you know, and so therefore compromising your values and your life's work, or you accept that you won't be able to have certain attachments in life because your life will always be at risk.
Yeah.
And it's very sad. And it's a question that I think I ask myself a lot, you know, and that's why they come after the family.
Right.
You know, I think about what's going to happen to the people, because right now, as we were talking about earlier, the students that are being arrested on these college campuses, people who are being shot down in the streets, what you know, what's left for their families?
Well, and I mean, what we're seeing happen in Palestine right now is entire bloodlines being wiped out because one person allegedly has ties to whatever.
So these words are to comfort us. You were, do you want to skip to this conversation that you were talking about nonviolence, or do you want to continue to move through the book?
Well, either way, because it's kind of coming up, that section is kind of coming up next in sequence with pages, or we could leave it for the end. Leave on a hopeful note, maybe? I don't know.
Okay, well, if you want to leave on a hopeful note, then maybe we should talk about the you know, the self-immolation person right now.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, we should not end with that because it's heavy. So someone, another man, young man, self-immolated yesterday in New York outside of the Donald Trump trial. And he did this to bring attention to a manifesto that he has written. Again, there's some stuff in there that is like a little fringe, but then there's also some inarguable things in this manifesto that like...
And a lot of it was economic, right?
Very economic. It was mostly talking about, like, it was very centered on Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, I forget who else off the top of my head, but a bunch of billionaires basically doing like making not like a literal bank run, but the like a quote bank run on the cryptocurrency market. So they all bought up cryptocurrency, presented it as something that it wasn't to inflate the market, then cash out and leave all the poor working class footing the bill, which is exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. And so that's a lot of his manifesto is talking about how, you know, it's one party. There's no, that all of these politicians are owned by the same people. He does use the phrase the American dream quite frequently in that it's completely like it's a myth that we've been given to attain to that was never attainable for anyone. It's never meant to be attained by anyone playing this game. It's just the Holy Grail. I keep thinking of Stan Marsh's dad chasing the dragon when he's playing Hero on South Park.
I don't know that episode.
But like, you know, yes, like, the point is you never catch it.
You never catch it. Right.
That it was packaged as this thing that anyone could quote attain, but that no one actually can attain it. Like it's all just been a fake made up thing. It's a carrot. And then your bills are the stick.
Well, see, here's what the reason I'm pausing here is because it's so layered and that's, things have changed. And when it was crafted with the, you know, if we go back to the Declaration of Independence, okay, that was a specific group of people wrote a specific document to free them from a very specific situation that only pertained to them.
To them, yep.
Somebody came along and started to interpret that in a different way. And it became connected to the fact that our Constitution is a living document and that we are thankfully allowed to make certain changes that freed people from bondage, that, you know, changed the human status of some people. So one of the things that we left off with was the fact that Negroes were 3/5 of a human, so that math never adds up to one person.
So then it doesn't have to apply.
Right.
Yep.
And women
still aren't
included in the Declaration of Independence and its drafting. Non-property owning persons, immigrants of all sorts. That's where the Black Civil Rights Movement actually incorporated all people into its movement, because, you know, it's about the separation of white supremacy and everyone else. So it was attained by the framers for themselves, and then they lost it as other people tried to take what they felt like was more pie. Now here we are thinking that we are just a plain old democracy where everybody has a voice, when it's really still not the case. So the American dream morphed from the pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness to what? A wife, a house, a car, a bank account.
Ownership,
So instead of, you know, bringing the ownership down, it's trying to convince all of us that we can be owners. Mm-hmm. Lift us all up to the rights of ownership and leaves no one with liberty.
Right.
Because we're all worried about owning.
Because even then, when you own, quote unquote, in this world, realistically, probably the bank owns what you own. You know, like, that's not, like, again, it's so layered. It's like, do you actually ever achieve ownership? I mean, yeah, if you eventually pay off a mortgage, but how many people are even doing that this day and age?
What's the next quote that you wanted to look at?
Well, then I start jumping into my nonviolent stuff.
So, yeah, let's talk about nonviolence, because I have trouble with it. And I, you know, I have trouble with people thinking that because we're covering this book right now that I'm being perceived as a nonviolent person.
Yep.
And I'm just trying to figure it out, just like everyone else. If somebody's smacking me upside the head, what am I going to do about it? I'm going to try to get them off me, most likely, depending on who it is, you know. However, then there are all of these other forms of violence that we inflict upon ourselves, like that cat who self-immolated. Like,
yeah, that's violence.
That's violence against yourself to make a political point. You know,
I mean, it's violent to the observer, too.
Yes, yes, yes.
As much as there is so much violence going on, being perpetrated by oppressors all across the board, the nonviolence thing kind of clicked for me this morning when I was thinking about the student movements that are happening right now, specifically with what happened at Columbia University, because it was so live streamed and mm-hmm. put on the web. But students knew that the National Guard was coming in, that SWAT buses, mass police, militarized police were coming in to clear out the encampment. So for people who don't know, students at Columbia University have basically made an Occupy-style encampment on their campus to protest Columbia University's investments in the state of Israel and role in this genocide against Gazans. It's really important because Columbia University controls, I think, $18 billion worth of capital between real estate and buildings and whatever they own in New York. So it has huge economic power. And so students there have taken to occupying one of the parks, quads, grassy areas on campus. And so, again, the university called in militarized police, the National Guard, to clear out this encampment. Students knew this was going to happen because they started seeing the vehicles pull up. Again, mass Instagram, Facebook blasts, TikTok blasts went out and said, hey, this is about to happen. We need every student right now. Walk out of your dorm. Walk out of your class. Stop what you're doing. We have to protect our fellow students. And that's exactly what happened. There was a massive human wall built around the encampment. Some people did get arrested, but mostly it prevented mass incarceration of protesters.
Like 100 folks. I think 100 people got arrested or something like that.
But out of
108,
like,
which is really funny because it's the number of beads on a prayer mala. Yeah. It's very interesting.
So the quote that clicked with that event to me for me this morning was, we can stand up before our most violent opponent and say, we will match your capacity to inflict suffering by our capacity to endure suffering. And that's the bottom of page 96 onto the top of page 97. And
me read the next line. I want to read it.
Okay, you read it.
We will meet your physical force with soul force.
Yep. And so again, to see militarized vehicles coming in and be thwarted by, you know, young people with just like holding blankets, sheets, whatever kind of barriers they could find, and being again overall successful. Because the encampment was moved to another place on campus. They are still occupying. And in wake of that, Yale now has an occupying encampment. University of North Carolina definitely has one. They're popping up now all over universities. So it's like, I don't know, seeing that this week really helped a lot of what Dr. King has been saying click for me.
It is cool to listen and watch people talk about nonviolence today. Because I wrestle a lot with this platform and putting this out there, especially being an African-American person, where the struggle really is split Malcolm and Martin, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of people don't like to talk about where Malcolm came back around at the end, right? As, you know, toward the time that he was assassinated. I think that was key. Because it's easy to have a militant out there being a target, but then when that militant flips over to a unity kind of standpoint, yeah. it becomes very dangerous. And I think that's what had King assassinated as well, is that he had a lot of people coming toward unity.
Yep, Fred Hampton. I mean, everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah.
So when I hear even political leaders who are Iranian, Israeli, Palestinian, and I'm talking about older people who have been through this many, many, many times, states people, statesmen usually, talking about how there is not a military solution to this problem, that we have to try nonviolence. I watched a person speaking yesterday, and it was a discussion on Al Jazeera English, and the show, I believe, is called The Bottom Line. And the subject was Israeli and American Zionists. And what is a Christian Zionist, right? And there was an expert on who was a Palestinian man who was, I believe he was Christian, and he runs an organization called Al-Haq, and it's a nonviolent organizing, it's a nonviolent organization, in the Middle East. And he was saying that we know in America, we know that the Christian evangelicals are anti-Semitic. And he was really calling out the fact that they want the Israeli state because it means that once all of the Jewish people are in one place, they will either all be killed or be converted to Christianity in order to be saved. Otherwise, this brings upon the rapture and it fulfills the evangelical fantasy. Mm-hmm. So why anyone would who is Jewish would align themselves with the American Christian evangelical Zionist movement is beyond me, except for money.
Yeah.
But he was talking about, you know, the host asked what is needed to help the nonviolent movement along in this situation. And he's like, especially we need more wins, mm-hmm. and we need to see more wins. And what I needed to do was to see people like him who are, you know, he's probably around 70 years old and he's been through so many wars in that region. and to still be holding down the hope of a nonviolence movement prevailing. And he was talking about the 2018 March of Return, and how 62 Palestinian people were killed basically approaching the wall of apartheid. So is that what you were, and then you were saying today that the wall is coming down?
Well, I saw it was last Saturday when Iran initially retaliated against Israel, because it was a retaliation. Israel struck an Iranian embassy in Lebanon, I'm pretty sure, and killed 16 people.
Damascus, Syria.
Syria, thank you. So again, a lot of people, like mainstream news, is not calling that a retaliation, but it was. When that airstrike happened, because the IOF and IDF were so focused on that for the first time in 7 months, I saw videos of Palestinians tearing down the apartheid wall on Instagram Live, TikTok, again, this is why these outlets are actually very important. So, I don't know what has happened since then. A lot of those videos have been scrubbed.
Mm. It reminds me of the wall between the East and West. You know, people just went out and started tearing it down themselves. That's
what a lot of the comments were.
Yeah.
From people that had lived through both, were like, this is very reminiscent of when the Berlin Wall came down.
We got to do it. It didn't just come down.
Right.
You know, no, and I'm not saying this like this too, but that's how we talk.
Yeah.
That's how people talk. You know, I cut a couple of songs from the first hour. I'm kind of, I mean, thinking seriously about the language here of, you know, wait for a change. It's, you know, no, it's, we have to do it.
The urgency of the moment.
The time is now.
And if so, if the American dream is to be a reality, we must work to make it a reality and realize the urgency of the moment. That's right. On page 96.
And we, you know, we have to believe
of a knock at midnight.
Inspiration from the great sermons and this of Martin Luther King Jr. And giving it over to as well to the we can't forget the Google employees who were fired and arrested. I believe it was 28 of them.
Yes.
That were removed for their protests of Google's financial support of Israel, which is, as we know, dropping billions of dollars of bombs and destroying an entire ethnic group.
I read a little internet caption on that. So it says, solidarity with Columbia students and Google workers who recognize the involvement of their institutions in the ongoing genocide of Gaza and are throwing themselves on the gears.
Mm-hmm.
And hell yes.
So all of this is civil disobedience, calling out truth to power,
disruptive action, direct action, all these. We're seeing all of this. And again, nonviolent action, too. Like, people will say what they want about protesters blocking, like shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge and all this, that, the Chicago airport, but that is not violence. That is absolutely peaceful and civil disobedience. So don't get it twisted.
Don't get it twisted. Thanks for tuning in, people. It's you know, I feel like my pace is a little slow today, not only due to the overcast sky, but due to the pall upon humanity right now. Like, seriously, I just want to say, like, the other night I couldn't sleep. It was Thursday night, you know. I saw you yesterday morning, and you know, I tossed and turned and could not go to sleep. And the wind is whipping outside. Mm. And I'm like, what's wrong with me? Like, there's something wrong with me. And then I wake up after maybe 4 hours of rest. And I look at my phone. And it's like, yeah, Israel's launched a strike against Iran. And it's like, we feel it. We can all feel it. And it's just a drag. War's a drag, man.
Big downer.
I wanted to come back and talk about, we both wanted to come back, folks, and talk about some some hope. We're gonna lift us up here. So one of the things that I was talking about was watching the president of Columbia University on the Senate floor. And I was watching this feed through Democracy Now! Is that Amy Goodman was interviewing two other professors who were Jewish professors that wrote a letter to the board of Columbia saying, we do not want you to be using anti-Semitism as a weapon.
Yeah.
And they were being very clear that anti-Zionism and anti-Semitism do not equate. And so watching the president be grilled by the Senate was really terrible. This woman was bullied by all of the clips that I saw were most Republican senators, and they brought in a lot of the church and state stuff. Yeah. One senator, and
funny.
So I wish I had more time. I really wasn't prepared to go this deep into this. That's why we need this. Yeah. But and I don't have his name, but he was a Republican from Georgia who sat there and actually quoted Genesis, I think it was Genesis 3. He actually had a Bible in the Senate saying, it says, are you familiar with this passage? And the president of Columbia was like, I don't know what passage you're talking about.
Because she's not a Christian.
Right. And he's like, it says here that whoever blesses Israel will be blessed, and whoever curses Israel will be cursed. And you don't want Columbia University to be cursed, do you? She stuttered so hard and was like, he's like, do you? And she's like, I guess not. And I mean, it was like out of Pink Floyd's The Wall, where it's like that big scene at the end where it's like, I mean, it was just like, what are you even saying?
Right.
What are you even saying? You know, this is not, this is not okay. So we live in a, we can just add fundamentalist Christian to the list of types of government.
Right. Yeah.
That's something that we're fighting here. And so then she goes back to the school and you know, and they grilled her until she agreed to do some firings and,
suspensions
of the students and
they lost housing.
Of the president. And, you know, shout out to, you know, the students at Barnard who are also going through the same thing. Mm-hmm. Ilhan Omar's daughter was suspended, and she's one, you know, Ilhan mm-hmm. Omar being one of two Muslim Americans in our Senate, House of Representatives in our government. Given how diverse America is, it should be surprising to folks to see how not representative our House of Representatives are. However, we're gonna start talking about some hope things. If you look back, when were they all elected? Was this 2018? Right? So before that, did we just have none?
Yes.
So you know. Two out of 100 and
I think Cori Bush too was elected in 2018 is like mm-hmm. the only congressperson who's admitted to being unhoused at any point.
Uh-huh.
We don't know if that's, there could be others, but she's the only.
So we're talking about economic disparity, mm-hmm. you know, because you have to have certain money to run for office. All right. Well, I like on page 97 of A Knock at Midnight, Dr. King writes, one day we will win our freedom, but we will not only win freedom for ourselves. We will so appeal to your heart and your conscience that we will win you in the process. And our victory will be a double victory. That ties into what we were saying off air about the kids, the college students who mm-hmm. are going to this prestigious liberal college.
Ivy League school, yes. Columbia and Yale now too. So
probably never had any run-ins with the law.
Nope.
parents never had to figure out the bail system.
Right.
And now these people are having some really difficult conversations in that luxury SUV on the way back home. Mm-hmm. And when you get suspended from college and lose your housing and you're at your parents' house, like, I just love to hear some of these conversations and see what's going on between parents and lawyers, you know, and not just the berating of the students, but the youth will lead.
They will.
You know?
I mean, they always have. Even back to our problematic founding fathers, those guys were like 19 to 22 when they were assigning these documents too, which is something we don't talk about a lot.
Mm.
They were very young.
Right. Right. So I can retire then.
Yeah. Well, we should. I mean, no. Life expectancy was a lot different, especially for working class folks.
Why don't you pick a passage? Help me out.
I don't know. Can you
talk about the shattered dream?
Before that, the sentence right before that passage you just read, I also really like, but be assured that we will ride you down by our capacity to suffer. Mm. Just that, again, that building these solidarity networks, practicing mutual aid, having a strong sense of community, being in this for the long haul, like oppressive violence is usually very kind of short-sighted, fast, immediate, right? But we have to kind of be the opposite. We have to be in this for the long haul. And the way to do that is to be connected and be in solidarity.
Well, let's talk about all the different types of violence. Not all, because there's so many. But the different types of violence and our capacity to suffer.
Mm.
What some people consider suffering is just plain old discomfort. So again, having your kids back home. Right. Because the economy is in the
toilet. You lost your Peloton room and now you have to give it back to your kid. That's
But that I'm suffering. I don't have, you know, and I think the way that some privileged Americans would view a social revolution is way more nightmarish than the actual reality. Mm-hmm. What mutual aid looks like is, you know, a couple, like, you know, finishing the Bell Hooks trilogy, you know, and just really doing that personal work to be able to open ourselves up a bit to share. So removal of housing is violence.
Mm-hmm.
Hate speech to oneself or one's loved ones is violence. Of course, we have the just straight up stuff of police brutality, but food insecurity
is violence. And inability to access healthcare is violence. I would say inability to access education is violence.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because if you don't have the tools to read and comprehend and do basic math, anybody can take advantage of you in this world. And that's pretty much a crux of capitalism is having an undereducated workforce.
Yeah.
And that's why nobody's blinking an eye at spending billions and billions of dollars on war. Because if you have people who are uneducated and don't see a way out of their situation, then it's easy to bait them with the rewards of travel and housing and food. It's what they say about prison, three hots and a cot. And I don't have to act right and figure out how to survive this just world because, all I got to do is go. And they used to give young men a choice. I had a dear family friend who was given that choice when he was busted in the 70s. For selling weed was you can either go to Vietnam or you can go to jail. And he went to Vietnam, he joined the Marines, and that really screwed him up.
Yeah.
Anyway, on a high note, page 99.
Real, before we go to page 99, at the bottom of page 97 of A Knock at Midnight in the speech, The American Dream, Dr. King says, "I've seen too much hate to want to hate myself. Hate is too great a burden to bear." And I think that is actually a lesson that was really important for me.
Mm.
Again, in just like the longevity of being able to be a quote unquote activist or whatever, stay active for the causes that I care about, is I had to find love and joy and other, because hate is not a sustainable emotion.
No. And so we're going back to the mental illness part for me, you know, when we jumped in and he was saying, you can take away my, what was it? My desire or propensity,
yes,
for happiness.
Yes.
But you can't take my right to pursue it. And I'm like, there's so many days where I'm like, I am not happy. I cannot do this. And then I have my homies like yourself who's like, come out, feel joy, hang out, you know, be in the sunshine, because life is an endless struggle, especially under capitalism and colonialism. And it's just been that way. You know, reading that Langston Hughes poem earlier from 1938, the kids who die, where he was talking about union organizers that are children, like you were saying. And I'm like, these, like, people been working hard since they were born, since we've been here. So how to find the joy? And as he says, and I think I ended it this way, what was it last time, you know, where he's saying that his dream has been shattered. I've had my nightmarish experiences, but I tell you this morning once more that I haven't lost faith. I still have a dream that one day all of God's children will have food and clothing and material well-being for their bodies, culture and education for their minds, and freedom for their spirits. And yeah, I remember reading that last week, and I go through, you know, I have to hold this book in my hands, and I have to hold my friends close, who we can just remind each other that we're here, we are healthy, we're walking around, and we still have vocal ways to be vocal and hopefully change hearts and minds.
Yep.
Come on, give us some last words of hope.
Oh, last words of hope. I guess it's an ebb and flow, right? And there are times for sure when I feel like things are swinging way backwards, especially when it comes to like workers' rights, police brutality, women's rights, all these things that we're seeing. And yet there's also been leaps and bounds. Like, I'm not having to go on hunger strike to get the right to vote right now yet. We could be back there. And that's the part that's, I don't know. Maybe that wasn't very helpful.
You could find a hunger strike right now if you wanted to go find a hunger. I mean, I'm sure there's one on for some cause.
But I guess
that
what I'm saying
is,
right, for me, it's like I have to remind myself there has been progress.
Right. Well, we're sitting here together, right, on the radio talking about this.
We're allowed to be in the same room. That's progress.
You know, sitting in the same room talking anti-government speech, which, you know, I mean, and it is, again, it's encroaching. I feel like it's the darkness from the never ending story, right? Yeah. It's crawling this way. As we look at Santa Fe and we look at Madrid itself and where people can afford to live or not live, eat or not eat, drive or get to work or have a job or not. The segregation factor here, the percentage of people of color to feeling, you know, welcome and a part of this community. There are all these incremental changes, but we have a long way to go. And we also have to look at these people are still, you know, New York is not that far away. Arizona is not that far away. Texas is not that far away. There are places where people are, the southern part of this state, where there are military zones blocking off the border to intimidate and possibly kill and arrest people who are seeking asylum, is right within, you know,
3 hours away. Four hours away.
How many miles, right? So we're not within 100 miles, but maybe 150. So we can't take our freedoms lightly, y'all.
Absolutely not.
We cannot. And I keep waiting. And there are certain things that I won't say or do. You know, I mean, there was a song that I was going to put on here, but it said, words that the Senate has ruled to be anti-Semitic. Mm-hmm. Very basic phrase about geography. But I would not compromise KMRD's broadcast license to be perceived or have Stella sitting on the Senate floor. I'll go. I'll sit there. Grill me like that lady. You know, they'll have me sitting there like Eldridge Cleaver. They are to gag me.
Yeah, they don't want me.
So, Dr. King, I'm going to leave this note. Page 100, I still have a dream this morning that truth will reign supreme and all of God's children will respect the dignity and worth of human personality, period. Little Queen Trash Mouth, thank you.
Thank you.
Next time, we're going to talk about the guidelines for a constructive church. If you're here for that, I might actually see if I can find that. It's a very powerful speech about really what is the point of religion and a church anyway. We'll see Dr. King's views on that. That's our book club, A Knock at Midnight, Inspiration from the Great Sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. All right, y'all. Stay cool.